the ballot initiative process is a really important part of our democracy, and it's something that has changed the landscape of this state.
Utah's incoming Speaker of the House says there's nothing to fear but fear itself when it comes to the legislature's ability to modify ballot initiatives.
A candid conversation with Speaker Brad Wilson, who's taking up the gavel this year. Plus, some voters are already beginning to speculate about the 2020 governor's race.
Welcome to a brand new season of 45 Days. I'm Julia Ritchie.
And I'm Nicole Nixon. We are just 4 days away from the next legislative session.
I will say what a difference a year makes, because nearly a fifth of the legislature turned over. So we'll have a whole new crop of freshmen this year and a lot of new leadership.
Yep. And for the first time, the legislature will have more women than it's ever had.
Yes.
Almost a quarter of lawmakers are women, 25 out of 104.
And that still lags behind the national average,
does.
Which is 28%. And never mind, also Nevada to our west has its first female majority legislature.
Can you imagine? Baby steps.
Yeah, a little bit.
The Salt Lake Tribune also noted this week that the number of Mormons in the state capitol went up from 2 years ago. So now the legislature is 87.5% Mormon, while the state of Utah as a whole is only about 60% Mormon.
And we know this does matter in the state because we just saw the LDS Church flex considerable muscle and money during the debate over Prop 2, which expanded access to medical marijuana.
Yep.
And by the way, we had a great bonus episode last spring about the influence of the LDS Church with former Senator Steve Urquhart on state politics. So you should definitely check it out.
Yeah. And while the church is generally neutral on most issues that come before the legislature, it does weigh in via its lobbyists on some issues like alcohol, marijuana, and LGBTQ legislation.
And some of those things actually will probably be coming up again this year. There's already a bill in the works to ban conversion therapy. That's a controversial form of psychotherapy for LGBTQ youth.
We also know of a bill to ban abortion after 15 weeks that was modeled after similar efforts in Mississippi that were struck down by a federal court.
And those are just two of the most controversial examples so far. I'm sure there'll be a lot more. We should note there's a huge surplus this year. The governor has designs for a $200 million net sales tax cut. And if that doesn't make sense to you right now, we will try to explain it later this season. Plus major boosts to air quality efforts as the state tries to bring the Winter Olympics back.
Right. And after last year's Parkland High School shooting and the October shooting death of a student athlete at the University of Utah, some lawmakers seem ready to tackle modest gun reform proposals, including reintroduction of a red flag bill that would allow law enforcement to confiscate guns from people who could be dangerous, and some other bills.
I think we'll see a lot of action on that, or not action on that. We'll see.
A lot of discussion
on
that.
Deliberation. So once again, Republicans will hold the supermajority. No surprise there. But it is worth noting there are some differences in this year's Republican leadership.
Right. Former Speaker Greg Hughes stepped down last year. He was known as a Trump supporter who could occasionally break with the rank and file on some issues, things like repealing the death penalty.
That surprised a lot of people.
Yeah, and expanding medical marijuana. Of course, he pushed for those things in a much more conservative way than some voters would have liked. Hughes has been replaced by the former House Majority Leader, Republican Brad Wilson. He has kept a lower profile, and we'll hear from him in a little bit.
On the Senate side, the mild-mannered Sandy Republican and Wayne Niederhauser will be replaced by the equally mild-mannered Stuart Adams of Layton. So I would imagine we would see some of the same deliberate, that's code for slow,
yes,
legislating as his predecessor.
Fun fact, all four of these men work in real estate and development, so some things never change.
We should really do an interview series that's called Keeping It Real Tour about all our home building lawmakers.
No, please stop. We should also note that the Democratic House leadership has stayed the same. Brian King is the House Minority Leader for another 2 years.
That's
and on
right.
The Senate side, Senator Karen Main has taken over as the Senate Minority Leader, and she is known as one of the most, I think last year she said she was one of the most prolific bill passers,
yes,
Republican or Democrat. So
big female lineup on the Senate side. I'm excited to see what they do. But we did visit Speaker Wilson on the House side at his new office recently to talk about the next session and what his priorities are.
And I started by asking him about a concern on a lot of people's minds, which is how the legislature might revise yet another ballot initiative approved by voters in the fall.
So we obviously want to touch on the ballot initiatives and the effect that they'll have on this session. Right now, we know of at least one big plan to change Medicaid expansion to a version that was very similar to what the legislature passed last year. Voters rejected that when they approved Proposition 3, Medicaid expansion. So is the legislature really listening to voters when it floats proposals like this?
There is discussion about how we implement Medicaid expansion, which the state has to do, or at least needs to, look at after the voters passed it. And we're going to, I'm confident, have coverage for everyone. So this narrative that we're going to go back to what we passed last year, that's something the voters didn't want. At least if that's happening, I'm not aware of it. So I'm not sure where that's coming from.
I think that was the Senator Alan Christensen's bill. It has some similarities to some of the things that the Medicaid bill did last year. But I think maybe speak more broadly to the concern that exists that the legislature is not your friend and is not going to is out to undercut or revise or do things to these ballot initiatives that would in some way negate the will of the people.
I understand the concern, but I guess I would just say this. When you look at Prop 2, which was medical cannabis, that passed. There were some problems. We were going to have to come back in and fix some technical issues. And the group that put it on the ballot initiative was involved in the compromise to fix some of the problems there. And they feel really good about where we ended up. And I believe we're going to have the best medical cannabis policy in the country. Medicaid expansion, I think, is a tremendous opportunity for us. I mean, it really helped that the voters said, raise our taxes to provide coverage for everyone. So the legislature is going to operate in that space. We're going to use that tax money. We're going to provide coverage for everyone. But here's the thing. The legislature has a constitutionally mandated responsibility to balance the budget every year.
Right.
So we got to kind of figure that out, too. I think by the end of the session, people are going to be pretty happy with where that ended up. And the ballot initiative process is a really important part of our democracy, and it's something that has changed the landscape of this state, I think, in many cases for good. But every year we pass 500 bills here, 350 to 400 of them are amending sections of code that need to be fixed or tweaked. And we'll continue to do that because the world we live in is changing, and we'll have to keep doing that kind of work here.
So Governor Herbert does this thing every year where he says, I want this amount of money, but I'm not going to tell you how to do it. So this year it was air quality. I want $100 million for air quality, but I'm not going to tell you what types of things you should spend that money on. So I'm really curious, would you commit to spending $100 million in air quality? And what are the things that would add up to that amount? Because that is quite a large amount of money.
Yeah, it caught everyone's attention. And I think it is a number that should catch people's attention in the sense that it's a big challenge and an issue for us, right? And not to be too personal, but in my home, there's five of us, two have asthma. The inversions, when they are full of unhealthy material, are hard, right? We don't like this. And the air's so much cleaner than it was 30 years ago, but our awareness of its health effects is even greater. We can't get in front of this quick enough, and we're putting a lot of resources and time in it. The last 5 years, we've probably appropriated more money and passed more bills than the 40 years prior in terms of air quality. And a lot of the things we've done haven't really even been able to be implemented yet. So we're going to see the air getting better and better. With that said, if we could find a good use for that $100 million and we thought it was going to make a measurable difference, I think you'd see us spend it really easily. Had this conversation with the governor. We talked about it last week.
Asked Did he give you a list? Did he just slide it across the table?
He actually wanted to run it by the two of you first.
Okay,
But
we're open.
he's got some ideas. I've been in a couple meetings in the last few days with some really, really great ideas on how we can move the needle on air quality. And maybe even in a quick way.
So another recurring debate in the legislature and in the state Republican Party is SB 54, the dual primary path. Have you talked to Dan McKay at all about his bill to repeal that law? And what are your thoughts generally about SB 54?
So Dan McKay, as you know, used to serve in the House, and he's now in the Senate, and so I will never talk to him again. No, just kidding. So Senator McKay, as you know, has been involved in this from the very beginning, and I haven't seen what his proposal is. Mm-hmm. We do need to have a process that works better than what we have now, and it's fractured. Not just the Republican Party, but I think the state in some ways that are unhealthy, and we're going to have to work through that. But not knowing exactly what the different options are out there, I'm probably not ready to say much.
But you wouldn't support a full repeal at this point, because we have had quite a few candidates arrive on the ballot through the petition process. Mm-hmm. So,
well, I've never gathered signatures in my own campaign, and I actually think that we vilified the caucus and convention system at times more than it's justified. But what we need is we need a process in this state that will engage and involve voters and have them help vet candidates through the primary system. And there's, I think, more than one way to do that. We'll have that conversation over the course of the next 7 or 8 weeks.
Okay, so this is another along the same lines, sort of transparency is where we're going to wrap up. Is every year the legislature pats itself on the back for this deliberative process, and it's kind of slow sometimes and can be frustrating to people. But then we see in the last few weeks of the legislature some big bills rise up, maybe with larger fiscal notes attached. I think the Inland Poor is the one everyone would point to last year. Do you, number one, do you see any problem with that? And is there a way to change that so that bills are given the full amount of time and not rushed at the end?
You know, I will say this. I think that our process here works really well. We have one of the last citizen legislatures in the country. And if you look around the country, most states and their legislatures are in session much, much longer.
Right.
Their lawmakers are actually, you know, paid enough money they could live on it. Mm-hmm. No one here could claim that. The benefit of having people that serve in this legislature having 2 feet in the real world is priceless. And so with that being said, I think there's always things we can do to improve and try to get things out maybe a little bit quicker. But the narrative of the Inland Port was not something that we talked about publicly for months, and is just not correct. I mean, mm-hmm. I had meetings in this office with Salt Lake City officials months before the session began. There was a lot of work being done, but something like that takes a lot of different stakeholders and a lot of hard work. And that is part of the process, is you bring stakeholders in and you work with them. We ran an alcohol bill 2 years ago that had probably 20 different stakeholders involved. And that bill didn't get released until 2 weeks before the session ended. But everyone, with maybe a few exceptions, really liked that bill. So that is just sort of the way the process works. Most of the time, we can get stuff done sooner, but the end of the session does create some sense of urgency.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Speaker Wilson, and good luck.
Yeah, thank you.
So interestingly enough, Nicole, I did notice that Speaker Wilson's office no longer has that infamous chair that Greg Hughes had from President Trump when he visited in December 2017 to roll back the two national monuments in southern Utah.
Didn't he keep it with a sign that said, "Do not remove, President sat here"?
He did indeed. And we actually have a picture of it that I took. Having good foresight then. And you can see it in our new newsletter, 45 Days. That's something new we're going to be doing this session. And you can subscribe to it by going to our website at 45days.org.
We have a website.
We have a website.
We're legit. Julia, it feels like the 2020 presidential race is already underway.
I know. So California Senator Kamala Harris jumped into the race this week. That mm-hmm. She's following Elizabeth Warren, Kirsten Gillibrand, Julian Castro, and a host of other potentials.
Right. But here at home, it feels like there's already a lot of attention on the 2020 gubernatorial race.
So much attention. Earlier this month, I saw this tweet from one of my favorite Provo-based writer and bloggers, C. Jane Kendrick. She used to work on the John Curtis campaign, I should add. And she said, "Who is worried about Utah's gubernatorial race in 2020? Too early? Not for me," in all caps. It really got me thinking about all the people that are sort of beginning to line up to replace Governor Gary Herbert after his term ends.
Right. So far, we know of several Republicans that are already considering it. There's Lieutenant Governor Spencer Cox, former House Speaker Greg Hughes, and more recently, County Councilwoman Amy Winter Newton, and some others that are rumored to be considering.
And on the Democratic side, cricket. And CJ was kind of worried about some of the themes she sees emerging already when it comes to female candidates in particular. She talked about it on a car ride with her sister Paige Checketts and actually agreed to record their conversation after I asked her to. So we're going to play a little bit of that for you.
It's a little bit different, but often we as journalists talk to people about politics and candidates, and they talk a lot about issues, which isn't a bad thing, but sometimes we don't really hear what people really feel.
The first person you'll hear on the tape is C. Jane, and followed by her sister Paige.
So, okay, we're just talking a little bit about how we would like to see women run for governor here in the state of Utah. We've never had, well, we had Olene Walker run. Well, she was lieutenant governor, and then she became...
She was appointed,
became the governor. Uh-huh. But she ran and didn't even make past the nomination. Yeah. But there's just a concern that white women in Utah are sometimes just symbols or tokens of progression, but not actually progressive in their thinking or politics.
The middle-aged woman that is maybe in a spot to run, typically in Utah, are just barely starting to see what feminism means or what it's about. And the angle that they usually seem to take is men and women are different, and so we need women's differences on boards and panels and in politics. But that just pigeonholes us into this place of difference, which traditionally means we're different because we're oppressed. We don't have we don't have the same opportunities. We're poor. We're gender, a pay gap. Right. So if that's our strength, then do we have to stay there? Because I don't want to stay there.
Right.
So,
oh my gosh, it's such a good point. If we have to have somebody on the ticket who can run on, I know how to run this Utah economy, but then have a lieutenant governor who understands these, like, maybe more social, political problems that we have, which is, you know, gender, which are gender problems, could be a possible good merger for people like you and me who are Democrats, who will never see a Democrat governor in the next 10 years, probably.
Probably. Well, probably. So
we're almost to our destination. We're checking out the new
women's
networking space, called the Wave. The Wave.
Wave.
We'll check you later.
I don't know, listening to CJ and Paige talk in their car, number one, that's exactly how I talk to people in the car when I have someone in the car, which is very rare, but I love it. and it makes me want to have more conversations in the car. Mm-hmm. But there is a lot of concern on the Democratic side, I will say in particular, that after Hillary Clinton's Electoral College loss, that there's this fear that having a female candidate is in some way going to restoke all the same sort of sexist energy that we saw.
No matter how qualified,
right,
that's not going to be good enough.
And you kind of hear that in their conversation about Olene Walker and how she mm-hmm. lost her primary, that female candidates can't break that glass ceiling just yet in Utah. But I'm optimistic.
Especially, that worry, especially in more male-dominated political spheres like Utah is.
Yeah.
But baby steps like that. You know, we're breaking that
exactly.
record.
So goes Nevada. No, wait, no one says that. 45 Days is a production of KUER News. This episode was produced by Tim Slover with original music by David Whited. Be sure to refresh your feeds next week for our first episode from the 63rd General Session.
Yay. And for more local news and legislative coverage, visit our website at KUER.org and follow us on social media. If you want to share an intimate car conversation you've had recently about politics,
yes,
we want to hear it. So send us a voice memo or find us on social media. On Twitter, I'm @_Nixo.
And I'm @JuliaRitchie.
See you next week.